the Award Podcast is brought to you by Naked City Brewery.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 213. 213, and was now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom indeed, folks. Oh, my God. Long day of drinking. Long day of drinking and eating Skittles today. The Seahawks lost. They lost to the Chargers. In quite the Seattle fashion, I believe. It wasn't a very good game. It wasn't a very good game. But man, there's always next week, right? It's only football. Got me a little depressed. In the show today, We are talking to the very wonderful, very, very talented Jessica Dobson of the band Deep Sea Diver. She's going to be gracing us here in the backyard in just a moment and tell us stories about how she, you know, got started in music, signed to Atlantic at the age of a teen. She was still a teen when she was signed to Atlantic Records, if I'm remembering correctly. And then she went on to, like, she was doing solo stuff, and then she went on to play with people like Beck and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs and the Shins, and she's just, I mean, just extraordinary career for this lovely lady, and her band Deep Sea Diver, if you haven't heard it already, is super duper amazing as well. So we're gonna be featuring music from their new EP this episode, along with something from their older album. And they've got new stuff coming up, so you're going to want to keep your eyes peeled on that. And I would urge you guys, the deepseadiverband.com, or no, god damn it. I'm looking at it right here. I can't even say it right. The deepseadiver.com. That's it. The deepseadiver.com. Follow them on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and get the music, man, because it is some good stuff. And we're gonna be showing you a little bit of it during the episode. Man, I hope you guys had a great week. I had a pretty rocking week, man. Pretty rocking. Let me tell you, we went camping. Took the kids camping for the first time ever last weekend. That was amazing. My back was all thrown out of whack, like, all week, man, like Monday through like Thursday. I even had to take Monday off because my back was so messed up, just sleeping on the ground. Like, I don't know if it's an age thing. I don't know if it's a weight thing. It's probably a lot of both. I need to start exercising and stretching, for crying out loud, man. Man, it was fun, though. It was fun. My daughter made her very first s'mores. S'mores, man. Oh, God, it was so great. And then we told these, I'm gushing right now because we told scary stories around the campfire. And my daughter told one that ran on for like 10 minutes about dinosaurs and princesses. And it was fantastic. It was fantastic. And she just loved it. Loved every second of it. We're going to get right into this, but before we do, we got to remind you guys that we get sponsorship from the lovely people at Naked City Brewery and Tap House here in Seattle, Washington. They are just great dudes, that run that place, and they've got some amazing, amazing beers, some of which they've won, like, you know, major awards for. I mean, these guys are the real deal, and they've got great, great food, Great beer. Go and check them out. They're located at 8564 Greenwood Avenue North here in Seattle, Washington. And, you know, if you go, if you're listening here in Seattle and you go to the place, tell them that you found out about them from the Air Raid podcast, and that is going to help us out along with helping them out, right? That's the whole deal. We want to spread the love, right? And they help us, of course, keep the lights on here in the backyard, which is wonderful. And they keep us supplied with beer, which I'm drinking right now to, you know, wash away the sorrows of that sad, sad excuse for a football game. They've got a couple of great, great things coming up, folks. The Naked Sessions, done in conjunction with Band in Seattle, a television show here in the city. And they've got a bunch of great, people coming up, man. Pickwick, Galen DeStone of Pickwick is coming to do the Naked Session September 27th at 8 p.m. $10 and brownpapertickets.com, and go and check it out, man. It's in that great screening room, and it's a wonderful venue to see some very intimate music and hear these amazing artists tell their story, right? Tomo Nakayama coming up on October 25th. Both of these guys have been on this show, folks, let me tell you. Yeah, it's great stuff. So go and check it out. Naked City Brewery. NakedCityBrewing.com. Did it again. Maybe I should stop drinking right now because it's late and we're doing the show. Okay, that's about it. One more thing. Please go to air-raid.net, click on the archives tab, and you can find all sorts of stuff there for your listening pleasure, folks. Let me tell you. It's, you know, we've got all sorts of stuff up there. Let's see. Click on the archives tab. Here, I'm going to do it for you right now. I'm going to scroll down. Oh, how about an episode with Steve Ronacisi, right? Ronacisi. Steve Ronacisi from the show The League. I love that show. He's been on the show. How about Fu Manchu? Ha ha! Fu Manchu, the band, man. On the Air Raid podcast. Let's just scroll down here a little bit. Oh, Scott Aukerman. Huh? Don't mind if I do. Let's see. Chris Walla, Death Cab for Cutie. Man, it's all right there at the archives tab at air-raid.net. Go and check it out. Like us on Facebook. Give us a iTunes review, and we'll be your friend forever. That's about the gist of it. Okay, folks, let's get into it, shall we? Let's see. We're featuring music by the band Deep Sea Diver on this week's episode. This one's called You Go Running off of their last album. God, History Speaks, man. One of my favorite albums of the last couple years, seriously. Okay, this is You Go Running, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Jessica Dobson of Deep Sea Diver. All right, we'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Thank you.
out?
It helps them.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Be a little bit closer.
It helps them.
And you can move this all around, all over the place, and it won't bother none.
I need to sit up straight because my neck hurts. That feels good. Okay.
I just went camping the other day, and we slept, like I took my daughters camping for the first time ever.
Mm-hmm.
And woke up, and I couldn't move.
Oh, like dirt.
Yeah, yeah. So my back, like sitting up straight is not an option for me any longer.
You should do the interview just in a cot.
I should. That would be amazing. It's a really good idea. I can already tell this is going to be a great chat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going to lay here on the floor.
Where are the hammocks? Why are we not in hammocks? Separate ones, of course.
Yeah. So you're working on your vocals a little bit, huh?
Yeah.
Why? Your vocals are amazing.
No, it won't. Do you mean because I mentioned the de-esser?
Yeah.
It won't change the way I actually sing. I'm really adamant about... I used to take vocal lessons. I only took a small handful. It was because I was losing my voice
mm-hmm.
constantly. And I thought it was because of shows, but it was actually a much deeper problem. I had like some weird thing. It was like a combination of like acid reflux, just gnarly stuff that was eating away at my throat.
Really?
And that's why I couldn't sing. But when I did take the vocal lessons, I remember thinking, somebody had warned me, I can't remember who it was, don't make sure you retain your voice, because a lot of people go into vocal lessons and
it changes it.
It really does. And wow. I was adamant about only taking the things like mostly how to keep my voice, not to change it. And I already was singing from where I needed to be singing from,
mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
deep down in your diaphragm. And, but I learned how to sing a lot higher, which
really?
Was awesome. I had like at the time, like a 1.5, maybe 2 octave range. And now I can sing a lot lower and a lot higher. I mean, I go into more of the head voice falsetto. I can't like
yeah.
belt it like Mariah Carey. But I can do some of the stuff she does, which is
yeah.
so fun. That like head voice sounds like it's a synthesizer, kind of just
sure,
ungodly.
Sure, yeah,
you know.
Had you ever taken like voice lessons before that?
No, not a single
was
one.
Was this like a really eye-opening experience for you to learn how to do that?
I think what was the most interesting was the way that I was told to throw my voice through my nose, which sounds to most people for themselves if they're doing that really nasally. But you're pushing more air through,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't sound that nasally to people that are listening.
Yeah.
Just you're hearing it in your head, and that's for the higher notes.
Okay.
And that opened up like a whole new world for me of singing and the keys that I would write songs in.
Yeah.
And probably, yeah, like I said, I already sang really loudly. But then I was losing my voice less consistently because it was just more controlled. But I really enjoyed the voice lessons I took. I took it from the same guy. Somehow I got hooked up with somebody that was giving Bjork voice lessons.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Which was awesome. And it's funny because at the same time, this guy that I was getting lessons from, he would always be on the phone at least once or twice when I'd go to his house. He lived in this really ornate mansion up in the valley, and it was through the record label I was on at the time that they hooked me up with this guy, and I loved him. And he would pick up the phone every once in a while and go, "Oh, hey, Ricky," and it'd be Ricky Martin or just like some random celebrity, Enrique Iglesias.
Yeah.
And there'd be, you know, a picture of Bjork on the wall, and everything was white in his house and pearly, and it was awesome.
I would love to be a fly on the wall for Bjork's frickin' vocal lessons.
Yeah.
That would be the weirdest class ever.
I know. I'm
here,
sure.
Here, put this bark in your mouth. That's right.
That's what you think she does.
Yeah. I don't yeah. know. It just sounds very weird wood nymph.
Yeah.
Vocal lessons.
I have a feeling that for her, it was probably also, because wasn't she like 30 when Debut came out? 29 or 30?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I just think she's been there forever.
Right. I know. Just always existed.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
she can
she
neither
was...
be created nor destroyed.
Right. Yeah, I'm pretty certain she released, you know, she had a, well, I was going to say birthday party, but it was the birthday single that came out. What was the band? The Sugar Cubes.
Sugar Cubes.
That she was
yeah,
in.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she branched off and did her own thing. And So it was later on, at least in her 20s, or I think she was maybe 29 or 30. So I would imagine that by the time she was taking vocal lessons by this guy, she was in her mid-30s, maybe almost 40, and probably really just needed to learn how to maintain
what she had.
Versus you could tell she already had her vocals down and didn't need to learn how to sing.
Right.
So that's like the same approach that I came with too, of like, I really like what I do, but I want to make sure that I don't screw up what I'm doing.
Well, yeah, and you don't ruin it for the rest of your life either, right?
Yeah, totally. Because
that's a possibility, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's why I quit smoking too.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were you a smoker for a long time?
Yeah, I was never like a pack a day or like, but I smoked enough to be a liar if I said I wasn't a smoker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. like I'd bum enough or buy a pack a week or something like that. And I was just kind of tired of feeling tired.
How did you quit? How did you quit?
Well, Peter and I quit at the same time.
Yeah.
And I feel bad talking about it because I just had a few cigarettes the past week, but we quit in January. And so I've had a handful since then,
okay.
but like
okay.
we were smoking constantly. And then the way we quit, I think it was cold turkey. Yeah.
Wow.
We had tried to quit apart from each other and it wasn't working.
Yeah.
But, we did it together and
well, that's good.
It was awesome. And I feel so much better.
In
hindsight.
I go in and out, man. Like smoking is my last vice.
Yeah.
Really. You know, well, I drink, but we're drinking now.
We're drinking right now.
But it is, it's my last like real bad hang up. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I've always kind of relied on that. Like I've always fallen back on like, well, it's my, you know,
right.
You know, I always give myself that excuse, you know, but yeah, I've had to take that pill.
Yeah.
The Chantix.
Oh, really?
Because I've been like, I just can't seem to quit on my own.
You ever, get in, you know, it's really funny. The vaporizer culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's come out.
It's weird.
Of everybody. We have this friend that he is so into vaping that
I just can't get over it. It's now called vaping.
It's a totally thing.
Yeah, it's so odd.
It's so crazy. And we have this joke where he's a roaster at Lighthouse Roasters.
Okay.
And his other job, we consider his job, is that he like takes apart vaporizers and rebuilds them so that extra smoke will billow out of them. And it looks insane. Like we literally were like, you should just come to our show, stand on the side of the stage and just be our
smoke machine.
Like that is ridiculous how much smoke comes out of this stupid thing. And, but people like, it's a culture now.
It totally is. I mean, yeah.
You're accepting. Yeah. Oh, you vape. Okay, cool.
Right. Oh, you vape too.
What kind of vape? Like it's.
Well, yeah, that's the thing that people are like now nerding out about. Like you and I, we were nerding out about guitars earlier,
right.
But now people are getting together and nerding out about vaporizers.
Yeah.
Which is super strange to me.
I know.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
But I guess it's like anything else, right? It's like people who are into pot can nerd out about some nugs that they have.
Totally.
Or some beers, you know? Beer
For
culture.
Sure. Oh, it makes complete sense. You know, I'm not I'm not making fun of anyone for it. It just was so surprising.
Yes.
I'm not.
It really is, man. I'm very curious to find out like what will come of vaping in the future. Like,
you mean like medical tests?
Yeah, like what's gonna come out about that thing that's gonna be like, oh, now all the vapors, they're all dead, like all of a sudden.
Well, same thing with cell phones. You know,
you really think the cell phone thing is a worry?
Oh, absolutely.
Like brain tumors and stuff?
Yeah. I don't have a microwave. I don't
but
like
you
to
have
touch
a cell
my
phone,
I don't like to touch it. See, if people could see my phone right now, they would see that it's cracked to the high heavens. There's
well, that's why you don't like to touch it.
Yeah.
It'll cut you.
I know. There's like water damage. There's all kinds of weird things that shouldn't be in my phone because I just kind of throw it around and I don't. I put it mostly on speaker when I talk. It just weirds me out. I don't like to sleep with it next to my head. Because, like, my hands, there was a study I think they did a little while. I don't know who they is, actually. I saw it online. They, the internet. people who have, like, this ghost itch in their hands where they feel, like, pulses or vibrations or, like, their hands itch after they've used their phone for a while.
Really?
And I mean, you know, you'd... you don't want to work next to a bunch of electronic equipment for a long period of time, or modems or things like that, that are sending a lot of information. And like, I know people that do work next to a lot of those things and just feel weird, or people who work with radioactive material or things like that. There are warnings against these things, but we don't actually know.
We don't. What's happen. That's totally true. I mean, the science isn't in yet, right? They haven't been around that long.
Yeah. And I don't think I'm a freak about it, but I think because they don't know. I don't know.
The collective
yet.
They. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah, totally.
But I'm not anti-cell phone. I just don't like to hold it. I like to break it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I broke my first one a couple months ago, and it's just been a nightmare ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, cut myself, like, trying to use it again, cut my finger open, you know, all the good stuff. They're all glass now. Why are they glass? Make them plastic.
I know.
What's the point?
Take me back to Nokia. I want to play Snake.
Yeah, right.
Can't find that game.
Or give me
one
of those big Zach Morris bricks, right? That'd be fine. That would be totally fine.
I'd be very happy.
So, Jessica... Let's chat about music for a little bit. Where did guitar playing start for you?
Guitar playing
take me
started.
Back.
I'll take you back to a photo, 1987.
How old were you? 87.
I was born in 84.
84.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why do you have to date me on the show? You just told everyone I'm
30. Older. I'm older than you. I'm 30. All I'm 34. Right. I was born in 80. So there you go.
And that's the first existing photograph of me playing guitar, although it was me just kind of my dad placing me
propping
on,
you
on
up
the 12 string. Yeah. But that was the guitar I actually learned on when I was 11. I picked up guitar. I'd taken piano since I was 6 and then saw a few people that I looked up to playing guitar and decided that that's
who was that?
What I was going to do. Well, I grew up going to youth group, and it was... the leaders that I thought were really cute who were playing guitar. And I just wanted to be in the band and be around
them.
Sure. And so I did. I learned how to play guitar. And it was actually fairly easy with the piano background, at least understanding chords and notes. And so I had that little bit of that jump start. But
so it was kind of the same. It was kind of the same reason for you that it was for some of the guys that I knew that played guitar. The reason that they started playing guitar was to get girls.
They wanted it,
get girls. You started to play guitar to get boys.
No, I wouldn't say that. I would say that's a portion of it. That was what triggered the interest. But when I actually picked up the guitar, I was like, it was kind of that aha moment of, okay.
Yeah.
This is what I'm going to do. Uh-huh. And the piano was just introduction to music.
Yeah.
This is going to be my thing.
Were you forced into learning to play an instrument at all?
No, I was always singing, always playing. And my mom and dad were happy to put me in piano lessons. I didn't always practice, but I was always writing.
Yeah.
And which I guess you could consider that practicing. My piano teachers would get mad at me because I would show up and they would know that I hadn't practiced that week's that particular song, and then I just sheepishly look up and I wrote a song though. And I didn't really have the teachers that I give lessons now where I encourage students all the time to write music and obviously have discipline to learn other things too, but I would never knock them if they said I don't actually want to learn this stuff, I just want to write. Okay, cool, awesome, good to know, let's do that.
So how did you start learning how to play? Did it like guitar, that is?
You
start learning to play certain songs or?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just had a book of chords that was my dad's from the 60s.
Oh, cool.
And that was what I learned on. And then I learned a few Sublime songs, a few Beck songs. Loser was the one of the first songs I learned on guitar.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Nirvana and Jimi Hendrix.
Oh yeah, those are tough ones, man.
That's my style, though. I dove right in. I just wanted to know how to solo, how to. I think it was a reaction against at the time. The biggest female artists were Jewel and a few other things, which I wasn't really into in junior high, and so everybody would ask me to play these folky songs, and that's not what I listened to.
Sure,
it was more rock, I guess the rock stations in Southern California and like The Cure and Smiths and things like that. And I loved, at the time, I'd just been introduced to Radiohead because they were on the Romeo and Juliet soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was into. So that's what I wanted to play. So I was always kind of disgusted. Like, no, I will not play. What's that record? Or what's the Jewel song?
I know which one you're talking about.
Dreams last for so long.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will not play that song, but I will play, you know, Creep or something.
But
whatever.
I will sing it on a podcast in 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, that's really cool, man. I guess everybody kind of has the similar story when they first learn guitar. You know, you learn a couple songs first and stuff like that. I always had trouble. I always wanted to be able to play Jimi Hendrix songs, but I could never... I never had the dexterity nor the resolve to really like go through and learn his solos.
Like you didn't want to look up the tabs or could you do it by ear or is it that...
I could never do it by ear.
Yeah.
The ear was out of the question for me. Like I did not grow up in like a very musical household, so I wasn't really steeped in it. But
right. That's the gene that I got somehow is the play by ear.
Yeah. Harmonies. Well, it sounds like your dad was into music, right?
Yeah.
Like he was constantly playing stuff around the house and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Both my parents.
Yeah. What kind of stuff were they introducing you to at a young age?
You know, nothing that was, you know, supremely hip or anything like that, but Simon and Garfunkel. My dad was a Grateful Dead fan.
Oh yeah.
Zeppelin.
So a lot of noodling.
Yeah. Yeah. What else were they playing? Huge Beatles fans, which was great. I mean,
that's
so many
awesome.
Of my people have that experience of their parents being huge Beatles fans, and it is important. And a lot of folk and a lot of like hard rock. That's what my parents listened to. Yeah.
So you got the solo gene early. It sounds like.
I just thought that. For a while, I got bored with just, like I said, like the simple chordal folk songs. And then when I heard Jimi Hendrix, like that was the first soloing that I got into, which it's funny because I don't really listen to much Hendrix now. But at the time, I was so impressed. And it was never a thing for me. Well, okay, there's no females doing this. I need to do this. Mm-hmm. I did realize that most girls that played around me were doing mostly basic strumming, folk stuff, and you know, I was aware of that, but I really just kind of thought it was badass to learn how to solo, so I just went for it, and I was able to do it and practiced a ton. And
so you weren't being like it sounds like because you grew up in a religious household as well, right?
Yeah,
you weren't pushed into like having to listen to Christian music or anything like that.
No, there was a couple of records that my parents were mad that I had, like Dre's 2001 Chronic.
Sure.
And I remember they walked in one time when I was in fifth grade listening to someone gave me an Offspring CD. And it was that one breakdown part where I won't say the actual words because I don't think I can. But you stupid.
You can say
I
it.
I can?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like an idiot doing it again. People will know what I'm talking about. You stupid, dumb, goddamn motherfucker. That one.
Right.
And I was like, because my mom walked through. I was probably like jumping on my bed singing it. I wasn't even an Offspring fan, but I just wanted to say those words really loud.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And they walked in on that.
Yeah.
And I was in trouble.
I said, I've told this story before on this show, but my dad walked in one time when I was showing a friend of mine, Alan. We were sitting on the steps to the upstairs of my old house.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing him the Dead Milkmen off of Big Lizard in My Backyard. There's a song called VFW, Very Fucked Up World, I think is what it stands for. And so they just keep on repeating the F word like over and over and over in that song. And my dad walks in from being on a walk or something like that, and he just loses it and like goes over to the tape player, rips the tape out right in front of my friend Alan, and just proceeds to like pull the tape out of the cassette.
Like,
right in front
of
my
friends. Shameful.
Oh my God.
Shameful.
Yeah. And I vowed that day I would never do that to my daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't know I was going to have daughters.
Yeah.
But now that I do,
now you have two.
I won't do that to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That seemed a little over the top. So nothing like that.
No, nothing like that.
Break the Offspring CD or.
No.
Yeah.
I think I just, they just took it away.
Okay.
I got in trouble for a day.
For a whole day. Oh.
It's funny terrible. The dynamic you have with parents because, you know, now I don't censor what I say around them and it's no big deal. And I just, well, Peter, if he was here, he would get into a very philosophical argument about language and why certain things are accepted and why he doesn't think you should censor anything. And but I understand to a certain degree why you should look out, you know, for those things and for your kids. And
I have never had the censor gene in my body. I don't know what it was. I think it was partly because of my uncle. He swore like a sailor ever since I was a little baby. And so I was always around him.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I still, to this day, I swear all the time. And it doesn't bother me.
But, right.
You know, obviously it bothers other people. People at my normal job, like my day job, they just think it's funny because I'm the young guy.
Okay.
So it's like, oh, the young guy. He keeps on saying fuck.
Yeah, when he turns 50, he won't say shit anymore.
He won't say that anymore.
Oh, shoot.
He'll grow out of it.
Yeah.
He'll grow out of it.
God young darn.
34-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. So what was it like forming your first band? When did that happen? When did you make the transition?
The first band came when, I think it was like right before I signed to Atlantic.
The first band was right before you signed to a major label?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What?
Because I was a solo artist and I had people playing on the records. Like Richard Swift played on the very first demos that I did those were the demos that then went on.
Well, let's rewind for a second. How did you get involved with Richard Swift?
He was friends.
How did that come about?
With, so we both lived in Orange County and he was friends with somebody I'd met named Eli Thompson, who was playing bass for him.
Okay.
And then Eli Swift and this guy Frank Lenz were in a band and I started playing with them or going to the shows and I was so impressed and so amazed, like, as you know, 19-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Like seeing, like, they are the most insane musicians and I loved Swift as a songwriter. He had this like very Nielsen McCartney thing going that I was really into. And I approached Eli because I knew he was a recording engineer to do demos with him. And so they played on those first demos that not many people have heard because that stuff was never actually released. It's on the internet. You can find it.
Uh-huh.
There's a song called Most Sundays, which I think all of them played on, and Crooked Stars. And you'll hear this tiny little voice that was me at 19. And
Do you ever listen back to that?
Sometimes.
Yeah?
Yeah. I have it like on an older iPod that I'll pull up sometimes to show people and laugh about. But I'm still proud of those songs. It doesn't resemble anything I do now.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a band. When I put those out on MySpace, musicians started coming forward, like mostly from LA, and I became friends with them. And then my friend Gus, who now plays, it's so funny, such a small world. My friend Gus, who now plays for Beck, was my first like bass player.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend Michael Zerbe's played drums, and it was fun. Like, it was a band, although I was still going under just a singer-songwriter Jessica Dobson name. That was my first band, and I didn't know what
and
I was
so you're 19,
doing at
you
all.
You were only 19 at that point?
19, 20, yeah.
Wow.
But I would say, though, that in terms of a true band in collaboration, the first band I had didn't really happen until History Speaks was being recorded.
Really?
And there are a few people who don't play with Deep Sea Diver anymore that were playing at the time. And that was a much more collaborative effort than anything I'd ever done. Because when you're a singer-songwriter, you know, I had only had these examples of like Elliot Smith and Feist. And I'm trying to think of other people who went under their own name. Or Beck, and you, even though if you don't know their story, you imagine that they're doing everything themselves.
Right, right.
And so you put this pressure, like, I must be a Ryan Adams. I must do everything myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and Is his name Ryan Adams?
Yeah.
Why am I freaking out?
Yeah. There's Brian Adams, the guy from the Eagles, right?
You know when words or names sound very, like, they just don't even make sense. Even when you look at it, you're like, is that how you spell that?
Yeah,
is that
right. How you spell the? It happens all the time with me.
I just had that brain slip. But, so I had these very high expectations where I will write the drums, I will write the bass, I will write the guitar, because that's what a singer-songwriter does. And they were very unreal expectations.
Sure.
And I think,
it stressful trying to do that kind of stuff too?
It was really fun for me to take that on. Uh-huh. But I think looking back now at the material I was writing then and the material I'm writing now, it's so much more interesting, I think, and multidimensional. And it has a bigger voice. And that stuff that I would never be able to come up with on my own, uh-huh. you know, even just stuff that Peter and I come up with, he thinks about music and approaches it in such a different way. And he's more of like the sparker of ideas, and he's constantly creating, where I'm more focused on one song at a time.
You do it a chunk at a time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And he will, I feel like he'd make a good jingles guy, because mm-hmm. he comes up with 1,000 ideas a day.
Yeah.
Where I like to
take
something.
Has he thought
about
doing that?
No. I don't think so.
It could be a great side project, man.
It could. Oh, he already has a side project. It's called Meat Hair, and they do whatever the fuck they want. They really do. They only play shows and are that whenever they play, they are only writing music on the spot. It's nothing that's
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
it's just like a jam session.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yes, but it's not like going, not like a Fish jam session.
Right.
Like it's really, it can be, it touches on every mood and every emotion possible.
Oh, cool.
It can be super dark or super dancey or just straight up weird. They
It's called Meat Hair?
It's called Meat Hair. It's like a joke, but not. And sometimes I do guest spots live and I'll just.
Sounds awesome.
It can get to this really sweet, like Can-esque place at times that. That's the stuff I like of theirs the most. Where
I'm gonna have
it's
to check
more
that
psychedelic,
out.
But yeah.
Where they play like a show a year?
So there are a lot of stipulations with Meat Hair, and one of them is they never turn down a show.
Yeah.
And they just played this one event. It was a tattoo show, a tattoo expo.
Nice.
And they played in between the best back competition.
Yeah.
When they first showed up, they saw like on the schedule it said best back, and they're like, "Is that a band name?" Like. And then people were asking the tattoo expo, like, uh-huh. officials, what is Meat Hair? What kind of a competition is that? Like, I want to enter the Meat Hair competition. And then directly after that, it was like best body tattoo or whatever it was.
Sure,
and it was so weird and so funny and so Meat Hair. That's it. They'd never turn down a show. So if you're listening and you want to hire Meat Hair to play at your... you know, strange basement, you know, it's going to happen. Just contact them on their Facebook page.
There you go. You got somebody to play your next tattoo convention show.
Yeah.
That should be a rule right there, is that they should only play tattoo conventions from now on. Because that just sounds so fitting.
Yeah.
Meat hair. Or like a butcher convention or something like that.
Yeah. That's too literal for them, I think.
No, okay.
They probably actually have in there.
Yeah, that's too straightforward.
Yeah.
That's stipulated in their contract.
Exactly.
So we should say, by the way, Peter is your husband, who also plays the drums for Deep Sea Diver.
He does.
Correct? Yeah.
Yes.
So how did you guys find each other?
I met him at Lighthouse, actually. Lighthouse really? Roasters in Fremont when I was recording here in 2006.
Oh, okay.
And
were you living here at the time?
Just for the summer to record.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was there, and the first interaction with him was he was tube and throat singing in the back while washing dishes.
Yeah.
I think he was 21, 22 when I met him. And I was like, who the hell is that? Like, you just, you know, the tube and throat singing where I wonder if I can do it. And I thought, yeah. Like,
sure.
Do it like it sounds
like Louis Armstrong a little bit.
Yeah. And then I ended up, long story short, working there for a few weeks while I was recording. It's a very random thing that happened, and we became fast friends. And then 3 years later, started dating, and now we're married.
Wow.
And we're going on 5 years.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. And is it weird having your husband in a band?
Always.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, I think most people have the experience of working two separate jobs, or if you're a stay-at-home mom, whatever it is, they're two totally different experiences.
Yeah.
And when you're living the same experience and the ups and downs of it, and when you also work from home together, it's really hard to shut that off.
Sure.
So that's like the biggest joy and hurdle to get over.
I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many benefits. Like when we go on tour, it's not just him and me staying behind and worrying about what's happening in the van or whatever. Is it going to crash? Blah, blah, blah. I'm right there with them. So that's like so fun to travel together. But yeah, it is, of course, weird. I mean, being in a band is already weird.
Right, right.
It's easy to get into your own mode of operation and to think your thoughts are the only thoughts being thought.
Sure.
and no, that's not totally consider true. Other people.
I totally get what you're saying, too. Mm-hmm. And like I've had experiences, too, in bands where it was like, and not to the extent of what you have experienced, obviously. But you know, just like people butt heads,
mm-hmm.
you know, a mm-hmm. lot in bands. Yeah. And I always marvel at somebody who can be in a band with their loved one
mm-hmm.
and their significant other, because that is like, that's some frickin' devotion right there, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And we try, anytime we come across somebody that is married or in a relationship, we're good at asking questions
mm-hmm.
and saying, how do you do this? And
yeah,
what keeps you sane?
Yeah.
What, you know, and it's not, I hate to make it sound like it's this dark world that we live. It's not like there are many highs and many lows.
Sure. Sure.
Just like any relationship.
Yeah.
It just looks different.
Yeah. And you enjoy it, though. And he's a fantastic drummer, too.
Yeah, he's killer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do enjoy it. I can't say that I don't think about what it would look like in the far future from now. Like, mm-hmm. I wonder what it'll look like in 15 years or when we have kids or these things. But we'll cross that path when it comes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's do this. Let's take our second musical break. I totally forgot to do this earlier, mm-hmm. so let's do it now.
Music break.
Yeah. We're going to feature some tunes from the new 4-track EP that has come out recently. What should we play right now?
Let's play the heavy hitter one by one.
The heavy hitter?
Yeah.
One by one? All right. This is One by One by Deep Sea Diver, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Jessica Dobson of Deep Sea Diver. Stay with us.
Other things.
attending churches. Should I move?
Yeah,
I mean, I grew up in a Christian household, learned a lot of things I liked about it, learned a lot of things I didn't like about, you know, that particular way I was brought up. And Peter and I share the same belief, and you know, we believe in God. We believe in the value of human beings. We believe in a lot of things, and it's fun. It's just a definitely another like awesome aspect of our relationship that we share.
Yeah.
And we really like also playing music together, not only in Deep Sea Diver, but I write hymns and things like that. And we I really like taking old hymns and rearranging them, redoing them, writing hymns in an older fashion, things like that. I was just commissioned to do something with our buddy Jeff Betger. He did a Minor Prophets, Minor Keys series with this one church in Capitol Hill, where I was asked to write a dark song about the Book of Micah. And I love things that have guidelines, restrictions, where it's like, write about this particular thing, and I can't, you know, just let my brain float away and over-scrutinize things. And,
right, right.
And so that was really good for me. And I actually tend to be more of a dark, morbid person. and so I gravitated towards that heavily. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's great.
It's definitely still a part of our lives, and I don't see it not being ever.
Yeah.
But it's very fun because, you know, I know it's a touchy subject to talk about with people, and especially in the musician community, and
well,
a lot of people have been burned, you know?
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, too, because a lot of the music, and it's definitely, the further I go along with the show, the more of a mixed bag it is.
Right, totally.
I mean, there have been people who have left religion because they were burned in some way.
Right.
Right, or they were forced to do things that they didn't want, or, you know. And then there's people like yourselves that you know, are still in it and still believe and still find value in it and can go along their merry way.
Mm-hmm.
But does it ever clash with your lifestyle or with your job? You know, your job as being a musician, do the two ever kind of butt heads a little bit?
You know, not really. I mean, the way that we try to live our lives is in a way that just tries to put other people first.
Sure.
That's a big thing for us, and we fail many, many, many times at that. But we try to make it a fluid thing. It's like we don't see a distinction between, okay, yes, I believe in God, and then I play music. It's like, how do those two things inform each other?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's mostly just trying to be hospitable, loving, caring. You know, when bands come into town, we try to have them stay with us. So like, it's not like, oh, hey, let me come to our house so we can convert you. It's like, no, come to our house so you can have a place to stay.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when I say this, no, just like try not to make it this isolated thing. Like, we're just, I don't know, we try to be as normal as possible about it. Uh-huh. I don't think we've put ourselves in a place that has made it weird for people.
Sure.
Although it can be a touchy thing to talk about, and, you know, we're never forcing it on anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
But we love to talk about
it. I have never in my life met a Christian who has tried to convert me.
Yeah.
I've never experienced that at all.
Right.
Ever in my life. I don't know what people are talking about when they're afraid of it.
Uh-huh.
But I have never experienced that. I've even gone to the point of going to church with friends.
Right.
As a younger man. Even though I am much more of an agnostic, and was atheist at the time, but I've never felt like I was being forced into thinking something that I didn't want to, and I don't quite get that. I don't get it coming from the Christian side of things, like the far right. I don't get it coming from the far left either.
Yeah,
I think it's all bullshit.
You mean, when people try to be heavy-handed in that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't force your opinions on me. Nobody's forcing opinions on anybody.
Right? Yeah. I'm just an advocate for honest conversation. That's all.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody has these extremely crazy, deep felt emotions about, you know, what they're passionate about.
Sure.
What they may not be completely honest with themselves about. They just need to talk about it. And both Peter and I just love good conversation. And, you know, that's why we always try to have a bottle of whiskey at the house or beer and just like, okay, cool, let's get real.
Yeah.
Let's talk about stuff.
That fuels shit right there.
Yeah, totally. It's just so fun. And I think I resonate with that because I am a songwriter and because I always have the antenna up of like observing and listening and processing. And so it's so fun for me. But yeah, I don't think that we've ever, like, we don't have the mentality of we need to convert people, but we just want to, talk and love. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's love.
I like
people.
That. I like that. Yeah. Now I'd be remiss if I wasn't going to ask you, I know that you've talked about this at length on many, many, many shows and in many articles and everything, but you used to play guitar with Beck.
Yes.
Right. And then the Shins most recently. Well, not most recently. I mean, Deep Sea Diver is most recently.
Yeah.
But that's a really cool thing. How did all that stuff come about? And I mean, what was the feeling when you started to play with Beck? Because you listed him as one of the people that you, like, when you first started playing guitar, you were learning Loser, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
The way that I kind of entered that world was I had a friend who I'd played a show with. I think I was 19 or 20. It was in Silver Lake. I played a show in LA. And he then went on, his name is Brian Lombarton, then went on to be Beck's. this is alter ego. Beck's musical director. So I got an email one day that said, hey, Jessica, wondering if you know any guitarists, bassists, drummers that would be interested in auditioning for Beck for the Modern Guilt Tour. It was, I think, in 2008.
Oh, okay. That was a great record.
I love that record.
Yeah.
And let's see what happened. I emailed back saying, oh yeah, here's a few names. Hope it works out.
Yeah.
And at that time I was getting off of Atlantic Records and was actually not doing much with my musical self. And I was managing a restaurant.
Going just like through kind a little of, bit of a dry spell or something. Like,
I was just really like put off by everything I had experienced and just wanted to take a break. And I was 22 and felt fine about that, you know, like, then it got it in my head. I kept thinking about the email. I don't know why. And I was just like, you know what? Why don't I try out? It would just be fun. It'd just be fun. A good experience. Okay, I'll do it. Talked myself into it. Emailed Brian, hey, can I audition? He's like, of course, learn these six songs. So I locked myself in my friend's studio for like 3 days straight, barely slept, just played and played and played and learned all of Smokey's parts from, Smokey's one of my favorite guitar players. He played on Sea Change. And learning his stuff was not easy. And like on Paper Tiger.
A lot of effects too, right?
No, actually it's pretty dry.
Is it?
Yeah. And so there's nothing to hide behind.
Okay.
And it wasn't that I wasn't fast enough or had enough dexterity to play the parts, but there's just such feel and such like soul too. And it's tones or tones.
Now, do they give
I,
you tab for that too?
No.
Like you just have to hear it and figure it out.
Oh yeah.
Really?
No tabs. Yeah.
Oh Jesus.
Cause I mean most of the people that were auditioning were session players. I was not a session player.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's their world, man.
Exactly.
That's what they do.
And that's not what I was. I was just singer-songwriter and a band member.
Were you stressed out at all about that?
I wasn't stressed. I was super excited, but just like, it was more that I knew I wasn't going to get it. I was like, oh, I'm going against people who I, you know, considering the people that he had played with.
Sure.
I had no resume compared to them.
Yeah.
And I didn't think of myself as any higher just because, you know, I just wanted to try out for fun.
Yeah.
And so when I got the first call back, I was very shocked. Like, wow, okay.
But you go into a room and play in front of people then?
Yeah, so the way it worked was everyone that was trying out would, uh-huh. they would switch bands around. So I would play with a drummer and a bass player that I didn't know.
Okay.
And we'd play four or five songs and they were videotaping the first time. Beck didn't come until the second round of auditions.
Gotcha.
And I would assume he saw a video of me playing and said, okay, call that girl back, call, you know, uh-huh. whoever else it was that got second round. And so anyways, I ended up getting called back three times and it was my birthday, my 23rd birthday. I auditioned for the last time. Thought it didn't go very well. And then I was
Were you stressed out at all then?
Though? I was, because I mean, was like, okay, I'm so far into this. Yeah. What the hell is going on, first of all?
And you're playing with Beck.
Yeah.
At a tryout.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
Yeah, and this, you know, he was one of my favorite artists of all time. Right, so it was a total trip. But I just felt very lucky to at least be experiencing this. Yeah. And so, yeah, so then when I got... I exited that audition and went straight to dinner with all of my best friends. And we were at some Mexican restaurant in Los Angeles. And I got a call from Brian and he's like, hey, kind of shooting the shit for a couple minutes. I was like dying. Just tell me yes or no. Come on, dude. And he's like, oh yeah. And by the way, Beck says happy birthday. And you are going to play guitar with him now. And I was like, what the? And I just like, like, I don't really like do like, the screaming thing ever. And I was like, what? Like people stared at me really oddly in front of this Mexican restaurant. Cause I was like jumping up and down and freaking out. Like, are you serious? Like, and the first thing I thought of, which is so funny, is like, I'm going to Europe. Like I'd never been on tour like that before. And I'd never been outside of the United States besides Mexico and Canada.
Yeah.
And I just, I was fantastic. So pumped to do that. God. Cause the tour started in 4 weeks. I mean, it was late in the game that that band was put together. So then I had to learn 30 different songs in 4 weeks.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Were you stressed out then? I keep on asking you the same
question. No, you know, I don't get stressed very easy about learning other people's songs. Uh-huh. I get stressed about my own shows and making sure I'm putting on a good show.
So this was just like, this was like, you know, setting aside that it was for Beck and then it was for in exotic places and stuff like that. This kind of was almost just a job for you.
Yeah. Yes, it was a job, but it was set, like, I never took it for granted. Like,
yeah,
it was, I basically, that was my first like major traveling experience in life.
Yeah.
And,
had to be some of the biggest crowds you've ever played.
Too, right? I mean, literally our first show besides the warm up show we did at the Echo in front of 300 people was 50,000 people in Norway. So like, it was just... I mean, and to tour on that kind of level versus the touring I was used to was mind-blowing. Insane.
Major bus.
Oh, yeah. Buses.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice hotel. Like, it everything was very nice, and I was not used to that. And I can understand why some people would begin to get used to that kind of lifestyle.
Oh, sure.
And, like, not want to go back. For me... I actually enjoy more of the DIY, like kind of like schlepping it, like, okay, got to figure out where we're staying.
Yeah.
ITM, like for our band.
A little more exciting.
Yeah. I prefer the really stressful hard work of that over things handed to you.
Sure.
Because for me, I wasn't back. I wasn't the one having to do the interviews all day. Like I got to do whatever I wanted until sound check.
Yeah.
And then play for 2 hours. So it was really actually a very easy job for me. And I was very thankful that I got to, you know, as I actually got to tour and vacation because I would go out to the museums and go out and
you got to see everything.
Exactly. So it was like half vacation, half work, but I actually appreciate more and I wouldn't say appreciate, I enjoy more of like the kind of touring that we get to do with our band.
Sure.
I know all the details and I'm the one TMing and people asking questions too. And it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But now, it's really fun.
Is there a thought when something like that is starting to wrap up?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you were just... your job was to be the guitar player for the Modern Guilt Tour,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So, like, when that starts to come to an end... And like, the Shins, too. You were the guitar player for the... Basically, for the tour supporting that album, right?
Yeah.
Or did you record with James Mercer as well?
Oh, we did. It was never... It was never like just for this album you are going to play. It was, I think it was more for the shins, like, okay, what's going to work out now? Because James had, you know, chosen to part ways with former members or sure. whatever had happened. Yeah. And I think he was looking for something more permanent, actually.
Oh, really?
And some of my friends still play with James, although I don't actually know what's going on now, if James uh-huh. is going to release another record as the Shins. I have no idea. And I'm actually really excited to hear what the next thing is
yeah.
that he does.
Yeah.
But
amazing talent.
Oh, man. And I still keep in touch with everybody. Uh-huh. But I had to make the decision at the end of that tour.
Oh, that was your decision. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, because I always thought, like, James, after the first, you know, iteration of mm-hmm. the Shins formed and then kind of disbanded, like, I always kind of assumed, I guess, that James would just hire people on for the next record and then break it up. But that's not the case. You actually, you left of your own deciding.
I did. I'm pretty sure, you know, I can't speak fully into past versions of the Shins, but...
Well, see, this is probably one of those instances where I'm just creating it in my mind.
Right. You're just trying to put the pieces together. What it is probably is just that the people that he was playing with, you know, as he was trying to figure out stuff, because it's hard to put a band together.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even for Beck, like, I just saw him play with all of his original members.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, man, that's so good. Like, but those members couldn't always tour with him.
Right, right.
So... But that's my favorite incarnation of Beck's band.
Oh, yeah.
Are those people, Smokey, Justin. The
bass player's name?
Justin Melda Johnson. He's so good.
Yeah, yeah.
And Joey Warnicker on drums. And, you know, that's my favorite. And so it's hard to find that and keep that, though, especially if the people you're playing with, which I know some of the people that were playing with James before, had their own bands.
Sure,
and
sure.
So I'm sure that there were scheduling issues, and I don't think it was like... Okay, they didn't get along. And the new band, they didn't get along. Nah, I don't think it was like that at all.
Yeah.
Just probably timing.
So, and you left because you wanted to devote time to mm-hmm. Deep Sea Diver.
Yeah, the tour was winding down, yeah. and we kept getting these offers for tours, and I was just like, okay, I know I committed to this,
uh-huh.
and I'm also, alongside, we had released History Speaks just as James's record came out.
Right, right.
Nishin's record came out. And I was able to actually tour a lot. Considering how much I was touring with the Shins, when I'd be home, we'd be touring for Deep Sea Diver. But then the tours kept coming in, the offers to tour while the Shins were on tour. And mm-hmm. the tour was winding down. It was just, I think, radio Christmas stuff at the very end when I left.
Okay.
And I asked James, and I was fully prepared to say, hey, is this going to put you out if I leave? If so, I am here for you. I would never do that to anybody. Just be like, all right, screw you. Thanks for the last year and a half.
Gotta go.
Yeah, no way. I loved and appreciated that job and uh-huh. loved James. And I just had an honest conversation with him. He was like, oh, you have to go. You got to do your thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so stoked for you. Like, it was so awesome to get a blessing from someone, not like, why are you doing this to me?
Sure.
And also, too, my friend Mark had come on into the band and he played guitar as well. So he kind of naturally took the spot that I was filling, the role that I was filling. And so, yeah, nobody got screwed over, and every relation is, you know, intact. Relationships
well, that's
intact.
Good.
And so,
that's good. Yeah.
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 It was awesome.
That's fantastic, man. Well, it's your career has been amazing. Like getting the Beck thing and then going on to play with the Shins. I mean, that's just so cool. Like, from an outsider's perspective, that seems so unattainable for most people, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's very really bizarre thing. But I don't think it's unattainable for anyone. It's just it's strange to me because it's something I never set out to do.
Right.
And then the fact it does blow my mind that it's all bands that I liked and listened to. Like, I got to play bass with the IAS for a little bit. Made friends.
About that.
Yeah, very bizarre. Just for a month, I was filling in uh-huh. for my buddy Dave Pajo, who was having a kid. So I played bass with him for a little while, bass and keys, and then made friends with Britt from Spoon through the Beck thing. Everything came through the Beck thing.
Right.
So it's just
right.
one thing that I, on a whim, went and did, and it changed the course of the next 10 years of my life. And I guess it hasn't been 10 years yet, but... Got to hold on to those extra 2 years that haven't happened yet. Yeah. But I didn't plan on any of that. And
yeah.
I don't think you can plan for anything, but
I don't think you really can. Yeah. I mean, it's always a dream though, right? Mm-hmm. Like was that true for you when you first started playing guitar? Did you ever have dreams of standing up and in front of 50,000 people? And
it was never really a numbers thing. It was more just, will I be able to do this for a really long time?
Sure.
And probably more than two, because in Southern California, where I grew up, the coffee shop singer-songwriter thing was big, really big. Yeah. And so I kind of had this mentality of, okay, if I just do coffee shops for the rest of my life, I'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, my 11, 12-year-old mentality into 16-year-old when I had started playing bars and then had to stay outside because I wasn't 21. And then and then things changed for me and my musical taste changed. And but it was never like, people would ask me, relatives, I think the equivalent of, it's now The Voice, but I guess it was American Idol was going on when I was in high school. There's always some show like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And let's say American Idol, and I love when relatives who don't quite understand like the world or the music that I listen to, like, I just think it would be so great if you tried out for American Idol. You would just be, oh gosh, amazing. And I'm like, you know, you're just nodding, you like smile, like, yeah, that'll be awesome. And
I'll try that out on Aunt Gilda. Yeah,
that sounds like a lot of fun. But now that, so my aspirations for music were mostly just the longevity in it.
Sure, just keep playing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that's happening so far.
I would say
somehow. Yeah.
And what's the next goal? Is there a goal?
Yeah.
For you?
Release the full length and tour properly on this record. I'm not going to be in any other bands.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, an open road ahead for that, which is awesome because we want to go to Europe. We want to go to Japan. There's so many places, so many festivals we haven't played yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love the people that we work with and outside of just the band. And I'm really excited to give it the best shot. You know, when I say I'm not driven by numbers, it doesn't mean that I don't want to see Deep Sea Diver succeed or grow as a band.
Sure.
And I do. I would love for that to happen and for it to be as sustainable as possible. But yeah, we have big plans for this next year. You know, having released the EP as a foreshadowing and a stepping stone to the full length.
Uh-huh.
It's an exciting 2015.
Yeah, that's going to be great. And so when can we expect to see the full length?
February, March.
Mm-hmm. All right. Fantastic. Well, I really look forward to hearing it.
Thank you very much.
I was a huge, huge fan of History Speaks.
Thank you.
I actually have the LP here.
Oh, awesome.
Even though
I probably shipped it to you. Or did you get it from like a local record store?
I think I bought it from Easy Street.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to say I bought it from Easy Street. Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say because we do.
Or Sonic Boom.
Still do all our shipping.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Just went to the post office today. Yeah. They always remind me at the post office, you know, you can get a wait at your house and do this on your own because they see me so much.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, no, man, that takes all the fun out of it. I love going to the post office. There are characters that work at the post office.
There's characters that go to the post office.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's just you're surrounded by them at that place. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is this going to be self-released?
The new full length?
Yeah, the full length.
That's to be determined.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Excellent. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
It's been a real treat.
At my end, too. Thank you.
Awesome. And you can find out more about Deep Sea Diver and any shows coming up at thedeepseadiver.com. Go and check it out. And you can get videos, music, all sorts of stuff there, right?
Oh, yeah. Posters, roller coasters. I just thought I'd think of something that rhymed with posters. That was the first thing that came to mind.
Professional musician, professional lyricist, right there.
Right, that's how I made a living.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Go and like him on Facebook, follow him on Twitter and on Instagram as well. You guys got an Instagram. That's great.
Oh, I'm yeah. Gonna all the kids out. Are doing it.
Oh, man. Yeah. Pictures everywhere. Yeah. Hopefully some of Peter in a bathing suit.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope so.
It's coming.
Yeah. He's a sexy man.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Jessica. And
thank you.
Can find out more about the Air Raid podcast by going to www.air-raid.net and click on the Archives tab, and you can listen to all 213 episodes there for your listening pleasure with people like Bob Saget, Jim Brewer, Macklemore, Death Cab for Cutie, Mudhoney. I mean, come on. It's all there. And now Jessica Dobson of the band Deep Sea Diver. I mean, that's it's complete now. I can mm-hmm. just stop. Right.
Yeah. It's definitely like Criterion Collection material now.
I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is. So go and check it out. And you can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we're going to go out today with another song off the 4-song EP. What should we play? What should we go out with today?
Juno song. That's a fun one to end
Juno
on.
Juno song?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, everybody. This is Juno song by the band Deep Sea Diver. And we will see you next week.